Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to episode number 336 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is September 8th, 2014. We got a big show for you this week on the Peristyle Podcast. We got Dan Weber coming up a little bit later on the show. We got Coach Harvey Hyde and a lot of questions from you guys about USC's big win over Stanford up on the farm. So we're going to get to all those. If you have any questions for us, best way is email podcast@uscfootball.com is our email address, or you can call us at 206-888-6755, or you can go to our website, peristylepodcast.com, and leave a message right there. Before we get on the show, wanted to let people know we've had a lot of a little bit of confusion going on when uscfootball.com moved over to the scout.com network. It's just been over 3 weeks now. So if you have any issues with that, you can also email me, ryan@uscfootball.com. Hopefully you don't have any problems. We have a frequently asked questions page right up on uscfootball.com. Over on the left side of the page, if you have any issues with your old subscription and moving it over to Scout and all that. So I've been trying to help people through this. If you have any issues with that and you're a podcast listener, just email me, ryan@uscfootball.com, and we will try to help you out with any problems that you have. And wanted to welcome Coach Harvey Hyde, who was going to talk all about USC's big win up at the farm. What's up, Coach? How you doing?
Ryan, I'm doing pretty good. Everyone out there that is a USC football fan had to be thrilled at the end of that game. Going into the game, it was a very unpredictable type of game, going to Palo Alto, 17 home victories in a row, Pac-12 champions 2 years in a row, four straight BCS bowl games, revenge game sort of for Stanford after USC upset them last year in the Coliseum. So the setting was right. The weather was great. Everybody was ready to go. As I said, great players don't miss games like that. And Williams came in and played great along with Cody Kessler and Mama. You don't miss a game like that if you're a football player. I think it was in the bowl setting. It was like the Rose Bowl, an exciting game where every play meant so much. Not a high-scoring game, but every play there seemed to be some attachment of thrill to it. If it's a long yardage, what should you do? And everybody had their own opinion. I'd run it. No, I wouldn't kick it. I'd go for it. I wouldn't go for it. Every play there was some type of decision a coach had to make, and I thought it was fabulous.
Well, I wanted to thank our sponsor before we get into some of these questions here, Southern California Tickets. SCTickets.com is the website. USC doesn't play at home for another few weeks, but you can get tickets for SC home games. You can get tickets for Dodgers, Angels, anything here in Southern California or across the country. 1-800-888-7287 is the number. Or go to their website, SCTickets.com. And, Coach, I know how you like physical play. There was a lot of physical play on Saturday up on the farm. USC versus Stanford. We have a voicemail question that kind of asks about that, and I want to play it for you and get your thoughts. Here you go.
Hey, guys. This is Sean from Kentucky. Just wanted to call in and get Harvey Hyde's take on that offensive line, man. I know how much he loves that physical football, and, you know, that's what we beat them by. We didn't beat them by the stark, high-powered offense throwing it around. We beat them up front. Our two freshmen on that offensive line played like seniors there at the end. And I've never been more proud of this team, how they played. They could have folded so many times, but they didn't, and they were the ones that delivered that last haymaker that knocked them out. I'm on this Stark wagon, baby. I'm pumped. I'm ready to go. This is the win that can really propel a season. And I say let's go into that Notre Dame and UCLA game 10-0 and show the nation that we are a force to be reckoned with again. And I'm just so pumped now. Fight on, baby.
Well, right. I felt the same way you did after the game. Pretty pumped up, pretty fired up. It's a great game to be victorious in. And, you know, when you go back and you look at Stanford, the history of Stanford's offensive lines, and they probably had an offensive line on the field this past Saturday that was the recruitment of the 2012 class. It was probably the number one offensive line in the country. They've had a lot of experience as far as being a part of all the BCS games and everything else and redshirting and be a part of a winning program, which Stanford has been. And then you come to USC and everybody was talking about, as myself, talking about, will this offensive line be able to mature? Will this offensive line be ready to go? Simmons was injured. Walker hasn't played. Two experienced players that should be out there playing aren't playing. And then you look at the left tackle and you have a sophomore. You look at the left guard, you have a freshman. You look at the center, you have a junior. You look at the right guard, you have a freshman. And you look at the right tackle, it's a redshirt freshman. You only have really one player or two players really that's had a lot of experience as far as playing in the offensive line and going against the front at Stanford, which is known for how physical it is, how they like to smash mouth you. A couple of years ago, there was a nose guard on one of USC's centers. I know who it is, but I'm not going to mention his name, that physically manhandled him. That didn't happen this year. And you look at the offensive line at USC and you say, if you're a freshman and you're playing this type of caliber football, then imagine the upside of that as these players mature, they get older, they learn their techniques, and they gain more confidence. And that was a confidence builder for them. They went in there not sure, but confident, because all of these guys have been, you know, in big football games in high school, but everybody was worried about them being on the big stage. National TV, and on the pregame show I did here in Los Angeles, I said, hey, these guys are ready to be on the big stage. That's why they went to USC, to be on the big stage. I also mentioned, Mama's not going to miss this game. Are you kidding me? This is why he went to USC. He's going to play in this football game, and he started and he played. I can't be more prouder at the way they played. They will play better games. Stanford will play better games. There was the game was somewhat of a game of mistakes and decision makings, but you look in the left-hand column for what happened. And as far as one of the biggest question marks was the offensive line in the spring and fall camp. I think now it's somewhat proved to itself and to everyone like myself and all of our listeners and people that love to watch football that it's a physical offensive line and it's going to be able to get it done.
All right, Coach, I thought you'd like the offensive line play and the way that went, but it was a little different. I mean, as far as the offense goes from week one to week two, record setting to kind of trudging along there. I mean, and as a head coach, have you kind of seen that happen before where an offense can look completely different from one week to the next?
Oh, yes, all the time it did. They went into the game obviously saying we're going to run the football. And they did run the football. They outrushed Stanford in the football as far as stats are concerned. Can you imagine one back rushing for 154 yards, 23 carries, I think it was, Buck Allen? Only thing I say, I would have kept him in the entire game. He was having such a great game, and I'm sure he wanted to be in the game. A very physical game. I thought that at times both teams were very conservative in their play calling. Neither one of them wanted to make a mistake. But SC forced them to go to a phase of their football game on offense they don't want to do, which is passing the football. They forced them out of the rhythm. The first half, Stanford had the rhythm going and really had time of possession 2-1 over USC. But as the game went on, and this is one thing you've heard me talk about, what type of second half team will SC be? They were down at halftime 10-7. They came back and shut out Stanford. Shut out Stanford in the second half, kicked two field goals, and won that football game. And in the fourth quarter, they had more time of possession than Stanford did. Now, that's what I'm looking for in a team. Can they finish? Can they finish? And right now, they prove they can finish.
All right, let's see. We're going to talk about the offense a little bit. I got a couple of questions. Gene in the OC had the first one. He said, hey, Ryan, glad you're back. Really missed you guys in the program. Gene, I don't know. We didn't go anywhere. The program's been going ever since. We just moved over to Scout, but we've still been – the entire time we've been doing the Peristyle podcast, we continue to do that. So, but thanks for liking the show. And He said, although he was very happy with the win at Stanford, he was not very happy with the offense. This looked like Kiffin 2.0. What is the use of all these great receivers if you're only going to pass to the same guy every time? This sure looks like last year, throwing to Lee over and over. Maybe it wasn't Kiffin's play calling, but the problem might be Kessler's. Maybe it is time to try Max Brown. I'm sure many won't agree with this, but Saturday's performance was discouraging. Hope Sark looks into this. Gene in Orange County.
Now, we can't call it discouraging. What you have to say, yes, you got to spread the love and you've got to throw the ball. Now, Farmer caught four balls. I think Aguilar caught nine balls. The tight ends didn't catch a ball. So I think they should explore the middle of the field more. They would have a lot of success there because they're really scared to death of the outside receivers. I agree with that. You've got to throw the ball around it. But the thing that stopped them from doing that is they were pressured. He didn't have a lot of time to scan the field. He locked on to a receiver, and he had to feel that there was someone coming from the outside or up the middle or somewhere, and it hurried his decision-making. In fact, he rolled out a couple of times and threw the ball out of bounds, which was good. I want to call it a wasted play, because he would have been sacked. So by throwing it out of bounds, that's not a wasted play. Or throwing it into a crowd where someone intercepts it. So he didn't have the normal pass blocking that he wouldn't, because they're a great pressure team. Every time it was third and long or third and five, they came after you, and they came after you hard. So they're a good front. And what they did with their secondary, too, they locked on pretty tight with your outside receivers, so they knew they were coming after you. So they didn't have to cover very long. They didn't have to cover all day because they put pressure on Kessler. So I think the middle of the field might have been a thought for Sarkisian. I'm not going to second-guess him, but he's been a big thrower to the tight ends. So I think he's got to start to utilize them more, or they're going to start doubling up and run cover two a lot, or man with free safety on their outside receivers. So you've got to exploit the middle of the field. That one play down at the first drive when they scored a touchdown and they threw that swing pass out to Davis, that was a beautiful play. You've got to be able to utilize your running backs in the passing game too. And I think, that'll come along. In that game, there's so much tension going on and excitement going on, and that sometimes you lose the feel of being able to stay calm and call a game. But as far as the victory and why you went there, there's always ways to get better. They'll take this tape. They'll look at it completely over and over and over and see what they can improve on, see what they didn't do, see what they did wrong, the whole thing, and then get ready for Boston College.
You know, Patrick on Twitter, Coach, and we forgot to mention your Twitter handle, by the way, at Coach Harvey Hyde. At Coach Harvey Hyde on Twitter. You can follow the coach. I'm at Inside Troy. But Patrick tweeted me a question, and it's kind of along the same lines as the last one, but maybe you get some more thoughts on it. Why do you think Coach Sark did not use the middle of the field in the short passing game to the tight ends and slots? No catches for the tight end position in that game.
Why didn't he? I don't know. I can't answer that question. He obviously either got distracted and didn't think of it, or didn't come down from the press box, or he had a definite reason why not to. I know one time he tried to keep the tight end Telford in the block, and the defensive end ran right over him and sacked, smacked Kessler. So, I wouldn't keep him in the block. That isn't going to happen. You're not going to have a tight end block defensive ends like that. So I don't know, but I'm sure that they'll look at it, and they'll see the way people are starting to play you. And don't think people are going to not look at how Stanford played USC. They kept USC to 13 points. Would they run 58, 59 plays from 105 down? So obviously they did some good things, but they have great players too. Ty Montgomery and these type of players are great players. Anderson's a great player. They got great players. Pete, I can go on and on and on. These are recruits that USC wanted. So it was a battle. It was a sledgehammer type of game. And I think why there were a lot of mistakes as far as mental mistakes, not only by the coaches but by the players, they were so tense and electricity going on that sometimes you get a little bit too excited as a coach and also as a player, and you do things or miss blocks or do certain things that you normally wouldn't do. Like David Shaw at the end of the game took complete blame on the way his team performed. He knows that team can perform better than what it is. Get in the red zone and only score 2 out of 5 times. Miss field goals. I mean, I can go on and on. Chop blocks on a touchdown. And then all the same way on USC on certain things that happen. So this is a good learning point for both teams. Fortunately for USC, they're in first place as far as in the South, and that's where they wanted to be.
You mentioned 59 plays. That's fewer plays against Stanford, the USC offense ran. Then they ran in the first half against Fresno State, 62. But and to, you know, for as far as the questions about not throwing it over the middle, I do think that's something that Steve Sarkisian would like to do. He does want to involve the tight ends. It did, unfortunately, look a lot like a Lane Kiffin kind of called offense. But I think you're going to see more of what we saw versus Fresno State as opposed to what was going on at Stanford. There was a reason he was trying to do that versus Stanford. He was trying to run the football. Buck Allen did have a lot of success. He was trying to keep the defense off the field, give them some time to rest because he knew there were not there wasn't a lot of opportunities for them to sub guys in and out against the Stanford team. So he admitted that on the conference call last night, Coach, that he did want to run the ball, and almost probably to a fault where maybe there were some situations where he shouldn't have run the ball when they did. So I think this was probably going to be as conservative of an effort you're going to see from this USC team, but there was a reason. It wasn't the general philosophy. It was more the philosophy to face a team like Stanford.
I agree with you because when you look at Stanford, or not Stanford, and you look at USC, USC is a big play team. They've got great skilled players. They want to get in there, run the plays, run the hurry-up offense before you can get set up, hit all the receivers, break plays, do this, do that. And that's what the philosophy is of the hurry-up offense. I think they got away from that a little bit, but you get away from things when you get in that type of atmosphere. And fortunately, they were able to win, but they learned from that. So people will come back, see what you didn't do right, see what you did do right, and move on. There were some plays when it was 3rd and 5 or 3rd and 6 and they ran the football. Maybe they should have thrown the football. But, you know, that's second-guessing. And right now, this early into the season, I'm not going to get into that and second-guess after a victory like that game. So I'm just going to go along with what happened and see what's going to happen. I think that's what counts. Don't look back. Look forward.
All right. Well, let's talk some defense. Tarek had a question. He said, Coach Harvey Hyde mentioned last week that our linebackers are undersized, and it certainly looked that way against Stanford as our linebackers repeatedly could not shed blocks. Going forward, will USC start getting Alabama-sized linebackers? And should we stick to the quick-hitting linebacker scheme? The quick linebacker scheme, sorry.
Well, when you look at – you got to look at your opponents and who you're playing, and when you look at the Pac-12, you're looking at, except for Stanford, you're looking at a spread offense almost with every single team that's going to throw the ball as many times as they can. They got complete team speed, so you've got to have team speed on defense. You're not playing that many physical type of football teams as you used to in the past. This week at Boston College, they're going to face that type of team again. They like to pound you. You know, I don't want to call it the old style, but it's a huddle. They come out of the huddle. They line up. They try to pound you and play action pass. Do those different things, and then once in a while they'll throw in a hurry-up offense to keep you off guard. But they've already committed a larger linebacker for next year. I think his name is Cameron Smith. Is that correct?
Yeah, Cameron Smith.
Yeah, and he's a physical type of linebacker, probably 6'2", 225 pounds or more. But you just can't have those type of linebackers now when you have to. You have to look at your competition. You have to say, what do we have to beat in conference? So in conference, you have all the hurry-up offenses everywhere in conference. Cal and Washington State, everywhere they're doing that. Oregon, you know, UCLA. So with this in mind, you've got to recruit the type of athlete that you need to win your conference. Then you have to eventually have a couple that can plug the hole and be that type of player. But right now, they're better off having the type of linebacker that can run.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of the teams you're going to face, Coach, are the spread teams in the Pac-12. The Stanford's is a little different situation. And, you know, did it mean that that Hayes Pillard and Anthony Zaro had to play more? Probably. But I thought Michael Hutchins came in and did a pretty good job subbing in when Hayes Pillard went down. So, but yeah, Stanford's going to be the anomaly in the conference now, not the norm.
I agree with you 100%, and not everybody has that philosophy. But, you know, people have had a tough time beating Stanford, too.
Right.
So it's something that you, and you heard me talk about it. It's something that hard to get ready for in 3 days and then play on the road and play an early game. But you don't prepare for that. You don't prepare for that against all those other teams, teams that line up and pound you. And Kevin Hogan can throw the football. And Ty Montgomery might be the best player. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not downplaying any of the players in the Pac-12. But as an athlete himself, might be one of the best players or is the best player in the Pac-12. He can do it all. I think Stanford hurts itself, though, too. When they run the Wildcat, they don't need the Wildcat. One of the snaps went over the head of Ty Montgomery, and I think they've got to stay with what they do and not get fancy.
Yeah, I agree with you, Coach. A lot of questions up there for David Shaw and how they handle the red zone. Every single drive that Stanford had went into not only USC territory, but inside the 30-yard line. I mean, one of them might have got to the 32, but every single drive you're getting into the red zone area and only scoring 10 points. It's almost criminal to expect, but that's kind of the effort that USC defense put in there.
It was. They came to play. They flew around. They sacrificed their body. They didn't let up. And when you don't let up, good things happen. And when you make a goal line stand or a short yardage stand and you sack at the end of the game to win the game on that type of play, that just brings nothing but confidence to your team. Because no matter how it looks, it's not over till it's over. And in that type of situation, all of us felt Stanford's going to drive the ball down and kick a field goal. It's going to be overtime or score. And it didn't happen. And so you never know what's going to happen in college football.
All right, we've got a couple more. Earl in West L.A. says, the ESPN announcers stated that the Trojan defense appeared vulnerable to the passing game over the middle of the field. I thought so, too. However, my take is the defense was giving up the middle of the field in order to defend against the run. What's your take, Coach?
Well, I think that was obvious because, first of all, SC didn't respond to that either. They didn't throw the ball into the middle of the field, so they played their safeties in different type of positions where they could help on the outside receivers. If SC would have thrown the ball more to the middle of the field, I think they might have played a little bit different. But Stanford's defense is designed to take away what you do the best. And right now, what they were doing is try to take away, during that game, take away the run. FC, obviously, what didn't come into the game or whatever what their thoughts were as far as passing the football that much. You know, Stanford had two great corners and they have a great safety, too, in Reynolds. So, you know, they're an experienced football team, and they're going against younger players, and that might be the reason why they threw the ball more to Aguilar than they did to Juju or Farmer. Farmer caught four balls or whomever. But you have to adjust during a football game. But as I mentioned earlier, sometimes you don't make the adjustments that you make on Monday. On Monday, it's very simple to sit back. We should have done this or they should have done that or whatever. But as a staff working together, these things work out. And you're going to see a different type of offense, I think, too, out of USC. As the season goes along, they will utilize again as they did Fresno State. And everybody ought to look at Fresno State. You know, they got bumped by Utah. What's that guy's name up there? Travis Wilson or whatever his name is.
Yeah, quarterback. Yeah.
Yeah, 5 touchdown passes. So the big game against Fresno State early in the season, Fresno might not be that good. And from Fresno State, you jump right into Stanford, who's the Pac-12 reigning champion, who's beaten Arizona State twice last year, year before beat UCLA twice. A pretty good football team, I'd say, and Oregon too.
Yeah, certainly. Coach, sorry, I think there was probably a little confusion on the question there. He was actually talking about the Trojan defense appeared vulnerable to the passing game over the middle of the field, and they were. You know, you saw Stanford get some chunk yardage when they went to tight ends and running backs out of the backfield. But he wanted to know, do you think the defense was giving up the middle of the field trying to defend the run?
Right. They were, and not only that, they were playing soft, too. They didn't want any big plays against them, and they didn't get any big plays against them. They didn't get any home runs with Montgomery or somebody. They ran well. They ran to the football. They made the tackle. Most of the time, they tackle pretty good in space. They missed some tackles. But, you know, remember, Hopper, DeJuice, these guys are big receivers. Big receivers. They're hard to cover, and they can run. They can really run. So, Ty Montgomery, throw him in on that. These guys are great players. Kevin Hogan's a great player. So, you have a tough job as far as slowing these guys down. They're very skilled offensively in the passing game. And right now, this year, I'd say they're a better passing team than they are a running team. They're more of a threat passing the football than they are running the football. Not that they can't run the football, but they don't have a Gaffney. Obviously, they have Sanders and Floyd. They're good players, but they don't have a Gaffney. So right now, I would say the future, you're going to see them throw the football more, and teams are going to have to defend that. But SC gave that up.
And then one last one for you, Coach. You said, I thought that this was a signature game for Nelson Aguilar as he became the go-to receiver for the first time in a big game, just as Robert Woods and Marquise Lee were before him. Your thoughts? And we had other people write in that they didn't like that he was the go-to guy, but it did look more like he was like the Robert Woods or Marquise Lee.
No, he was. He was the most experienced receiver out there, so I think that Cody knows what he's going to do more than he knows what the other players are going to do, especially when he's pressured and go to the open area. I think he knows that better, so he went to Nelson more, and Aguilar did a great job. And that one pass when they went where it was an incomplete towards, I forget what quarter it was, Aguilar came across the middle, and he was wide open. It was a fourth down play, I think it was. It was incomplete. He basically was hurried so much, he couldn't throw the ball properly. Otherwise, that would have been a big play, too. He had his 10th catch, and that they would have converted that. So as you play with the other players more, you'll get to know, and they'll learn on what to do when you're scrambling around. And I think right now Nelson is more of an experienced player, played with Cody last year, and I think that's why they went to him.
All right.
Well, it's not like SC did last year with Lane Kiffin. If you want to know what they did, watch the Alabama game.
Yeah. Nice. All right. Well, we'll see. Road test against Boston College coming up from Max. We really appreciate you coming on the show, Coach, and sharing your thoughts and expertise. We'll see what happens. We'll talk to you on Monday next week when the Trojans take on Boston College.
Again, I want to thank all of our listeners for listening, and congratulations. It was a great win. It's always great to win no matter what the situation might be. Some of the headlines weren't what I liked, but, hey, when you read the paper and you look at the final score, that's what counts. And 13-10, USC's victory is what it's all about.
All right. Well, thanks, Coach, for that. Everyone else, back in a minute. We're going to talk to USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287, 1-800-888-7287, that's 1-800-888-7287, or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concerts, sports, and theater.
We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
We are back on the Peristyle Podcast. We have USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber, who is up there on the farm checking out USC's crazy 13-10 win over the Stanford Cardinal. Dan, what's going on, man? How was that trip up to Northern California?
The end was the result was great, and the fact that they just didn't give up, didn't give in. How I liked it that they start wanted to battle them about, when the calls started getting a little bit out of hand in typical typical Pac-12 fashion. I liked it that Pac came down, at his own, risk to his own reputation and all that. I think USC people had to like, that was a team that wasn't going to let you push it around no matter how things were going. And they wanted to come out of there with the W, and they did. And that's still a fairly young team, not in the best of situations with Leonard. We're not sure about, Leonard Williams and how healthy he was, and, just two running backs. And It was a pretty impressive day. It's a big difference from, say, 2 years ago when, you know, they got pushed around and kind of lost a game that, you know, they're ranked number two in the country. So from all those standpoints, and the other part of it, I think, was having 20,000 or so USC fans in the stands, I think it really mattered. I think, you know, that's probably one of the issues with the Pac-12 officiating is they do tend to be a little bit influenced by the crowds. And I think it helped a little bit that USC fans were all over the stadium and vocal as heck. And I won't underplay that. The USC fan base did a great job Saturday.
All right. Well, there's tons of good stuff to get to from this game. And we have a lot of questions, so maybe we can kind of touch on different points because people ask questions kind of all over the board. So I think it'd be a good way to kind of express your thoughts on what happened in the game by answering these questions, if that's okay with you.
Sounds great.
All right, let's go to Dennis in Lancaster. He said, great win for USC. Regardless of the penalties, injuries, and lack of depth, USC pulled off the victory. My hat's off to the stellar defense that came through the clutch all game long. My question is, do you think Cody Kessler's toe injury had an impact on his throwing, and Sark's play calling just seemed that they went to the run more than they wanted to, and the timing of his passes were a little bit off? Thanks, Ryan, Coach, and Dan. Keep up the great work and fight on.
To be honest, I don't think it had anything to do with it at all. I think the way Stanford plays wide receivers, especially younger wide receivers, the things they get away with doing they disrupt you and they disrupt your timing a little bit. I do think USC absolutely believed that to beat Stanford, you have to be able to run the football. And even though they beat them last year without doing that, but that was their theory, is you have to be able to run the football. The thinking is longer drives, more time of possession, defense doesn't have to be out there so much. The problem is when you get three and outs, which they did a few times, Stanford has the ball back, and then they get a chance to wear your defense down. Even with the time of possession advantage Stanford's way, I mean, I think I would guess if Sark had to do it over again, he wouldn't admit this, he'd probably have a different game plan. But they were able to run it at the end of the game. They were able to run it, Buck and Justin, you know, made enough runs there at the end to, you know, put him in position. And from that standpoint, I think, you know, but that I think was the game plan. I don't think it had anything to do with Cody. So I just think if the timing wasn't there, it was more Stanford, the Stanford defense that always makes it tough on you. And I would have liked to have seen him run more the quick slants, more the where they really run crossing routes and run all the way to the sideline and make the Stanford kids follow you all the way, that kind of thing. But, they did what they did, and, they stuck to it, as Sark said, stubbornly, and maybe too much. But they stuck to it, and they survived, and Stanford kind of went away from what they had done. When they got to the red zone, they started doing kind of goofy stuff. So they got away from their game plan, I thought, and had guys running the ball that probably shouldn't have been running it, and made some really, I thought, bizarre decisions. And, that's not normally the way USC Stanford turns out. But, I thought, they also kind of stalemated the issues with the officiating. I mean, I thought the chop block that took a touchdown away from Stanford didn't have to be called. It was a chop. It was an unusual chop block like you've never seen before between a late arriving offensive lineman and a running back who threw his body, at the USC defender, whose name I don't remember, who's at knees and just took his knees out. I think it might have been Delwan Simmons. But they didn't have to call that, and they did. but I think it was just – it's almost hard to describe, when you say, was it any one thing, or it was a whole lot of things and a lot of things working together on both sides of the ball in both teams that we haven't seen before. And it is hard to kind of describe in one you know, in one phase of the game or in one player. So I would say not Cody at all, actually.
Okay. Thanks for that one, Dennis. Let's go to Chris. He says, love the podcast. Never miss an episode. Thank you very much, Chris. First time submitting a question. It's for Dan. Why do you think USC was insistent upon attempting to run the ball up the middle on a physical team like Stanford? It seems like we attacked their strength. It became increasingly frustrating to watch because we moved the ball with ease through the air, especially on the first drive, but then overcommitted to the run the rest of the game. First and second downs became predictable run attempts for little or no gain, and Stanford began attacking the box and stacking the box. We made no adjustment, and the drives repeatedly stalled as a result. I feel like the game was won despite our play calling. That's Chris in Cambria.
I don't know if it was the greatest play calling. And, you know, there's an advantage to being stubborn a little bit. And, you know, it did get you the Buck Allen 50-yard run that got the game tied up. So, you know, put them in a position to go ahead right at that point. And they were able to run the ball on the last series. So I think actually conditioning played as much a part of that. And being out on the field at the end, being down on the field, USC's kids looked like they were in better shape at the end of the game. And I think that shocked Stanford a little bit. They looked like they were – it was really hot. It was hotter than you really imagined when you were down on that field. And I think it shocked Stanford that the USC kids were a little fresher than they were. So that plays into a little bit the running part of it. Yeah, I think they went away from it a little bit. But I think Stanford adjusted after that first series. I think Stanford adjusted to what USC was doing, throwing the ball. And USC felt like they were, you know, going to take away the pass game and give them a little bit more of the run. You know, it might have looked like they stacked the box, but I don't think they were doing that as much as, you know, just if the timing is off just a little bit, you know, they can make it pretty tough on you. But USC, you know, when you look at, you know, the overall stats, I mean, Buck Allen had 154 yards rushing against Stanford, against the Stanford team that hadn't given up. He's the first 100-yard rusher in the last 10 games against Stanford. So in some ways, USC was pretty successful in what they were doing, although there were times they ran the ball. I don't think I probably would have, and probably if Sark had to do it again, he wouldn't either. But, you know, it's one of those ones where, you know, Sark said, Pete Carroll would have said, this is a beautiful win. This is the kind of win you glory in, and we'll take it. And I think that's their theory is when you ask them, they say, we'll take it. We'll walk out of there and be happy about it. But I think they'll learn from it. And I think if they had to do things over again offensively and defensively, the game plans probably wouldn't look exactly the way they played out in that game.
I agree with you there, Dan. Let's go to Lamar. He had a question. He says, it feels great to see such a great display of defense and a presence of the running game. USC committed to the run, played smash-mouth football on both sides of the ball. Looking at the first two games, the team gave opponents a hard time to prepare for. They're able to play different styles of football. The conference is playing well, and I'm impressed with one of the newcomers, Utah. They beat Stanford last year, BYU, lost to Arizona State by one, had UCLA beat with a second-string QB in 2013. They're tough at home, and they represent the conference well. What is your take on our team and the Utes? That's from Lamar.
Yeah, I think that Utah game, where they beat Fresno State, basically says, okay, you can add one more trip to the schedule that looks like it's not going to be easy. You know, that's it's still a schedule, I think, that isn't impossible, you know, for USC to get ready for. With the trip next week, at least they have a bye the week after. Then you get Oregon State and Arizona State, two teams that throw the ball completely different ways of throwing the ball. But, I kind of like the way the schedule sets up. And you know, if you're in the Pac-12, you've probably got to be ready, to play different teams in different situations where, yeah, the thing that always separated the Pac-12 for me was there are more teams that can upset you than in a lot of other places. More teams that think they got a chance to upset you, as Stanford found out last year at Utah. However, USC does not have to go to Oregon, or doesn't have to play Oregon either place until the championship game. So I think from that standpoint, it's a schedule you probably would be saying, okay, this is a schedule we'll take. And but it doesn't make it easier with what Utah did Saturday.
It definitely does not. It's one of those tough games. People are talking about like making a run and trying to go 10-0. You had to beat Stanford to be able to do that, Dan. It's certainly a possibility. Arizona State's looming in a few weeks, but that game, that Utah game, is going to be a tough one too.
Well, I guess ESPN's Football Power Index or whatever now says, you know, USC, they're the ones that run, you know, the 30-some thousand computer calculations for each team, for each game or whatever. And they're now saying, you know, that, you know, the odds are USC will be 10-0 going into the UCLA game. So I guess we would probably take that and be happy to see how those last two games turn out. I mean, that's like the dream scenario, obviously. And we can talk about it. You don't want the team thinking about it. But if they end up that way and end up with UCLA and Notre Dame and trying to, you know, shoot for the Pac-12 championship game. I mean, I think if you're thinking outside the box and ahead of yourself and all that, one of the things, if I'm the Pac-12 now, and years past, there wasn't any advantage to the Pac-12 helping USC, not helping USC, but not, you know, they didn't give a darn about what happened to USC, because USC couldn't help the Pac-12 in the bowls, couldn't help them in the national rankings and all that, not enough. This year, the best scenario for the Pac-12 right now is probably for USC to go unbeaten like that and get to the championship game against an unbeaten Oregon, which would give the Pac-12 a chance to get two teams into the Final Four. And, you know, if you want to really think ahead, way, way, way ahead, way too far ahead, that would be, if I'm the Pac-12, if I'm Larry Scott right now, I think, man, that would be a good thing, wouldn't it? And I think that would be because USC doesn't play Oregon in the season. That gives you a chance to have two unbeaten teams in the championship game. And what the heck, you know, looking down the road is something we can do. They can't, but if I were, you know, if I were drawing that scenario out for the Pac-12, I'd say this is the best thing that could happen.
All right, let's see. Let's go to our next question, and this is going to be from Earl in West L.A. He says, wow, good teams find a way to win. Stanford made 7 trips into the red zone and scores only 10 points. The coach gets an unsportsmanlike flag. The athletic director questions official's call. Andre Hidari gets called for a late hit on a kickoff. Team captain's ejected. We give up 10 penalties for 87 yards. Statistically, it looks like the other team won, and we managed to, quote-unquote, steal a win. What a great game. I thought I understood why Hayes Pollard was ejected until I switched to the Oregon game, where I saw a Michigan State defensive player hit Marcus Mariota helmet first, and he was down, but apparently before the whistle. The penalty was called for a late hit, but not targeting. If you happen to see this first quarter play, can you or one of your experts please explain the difference between this and Pollard's targeting penalty and ejection? That's Earl in West L.A.
Yeah, I mean, the rules are different for a ball carrier. And for example, I mean, this is where you don't like the rule. Let's say when Ty Montgomery gets that kickoff and has to, on the punt return, and Chris Alvarado on the sidelines, the only guy in between. And let's say Chris stands up, or drops his head, and Montgomery drops it at the same time, and Montgomery just goes right through his face mask, let's say. Would he get called for targeting? No, he wouldn't. When the ball carrier is involved, and Montgomery was a ball carrier, and he's in an odd position if he's getting very close. I mean, his last step, his foot was on the field. Hayes is going over and talking to Hayes right afterwards. I mean, you could tell he didn't feel guilty because he really, in his mind, wasn't targeting. He had his hands up. The unfortunate thing, his head got there before his hands got there. So his helmet got there before his hands did. So his helmet got to the Montgomery's face mask first. And then his hands got there. Wasn't a great deal of contact, one of those just killer hits, but one of those ones you could have even called called it and not ejected it. And I think that the adding the ejection, you don't have to eject on that call. And I thought that was probably over the line. We'll see what happens when, because targeting assumes you know the intent of the defensive player. And talking to Hayes, and Hayes is not a kid that's going to tell you one thing and really know he did something else. He absolutely had one thing in mind there, was just to get Montgomery out of bounds. And as you could see his hands coming up, he was trying to push him out of bounds. His head got there first. I certainly wouldn't have ejected him on the play, but you had to call it. The Stanford fans were coming out of the stands. It, you know, happened right in front of their fans, and they went nuts, and the flag came in. But those are tough calls, but I don't think he deserved to be ejected.
And it was interesting last night on the conference call, Steve Sarkisian wasn't sure if he would miss the first half of the BC game, but my understanding of the rule, Dan, is that you're ejected during the second half of the game, you miss the first half of the next one.
Well, I think there is, though, the ability of each conference to take a look at that, and they do replay, and then they also have the review after the game before they, that they could say, we reviewed the film again, we've checked with everybody involved, blah, 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 and we've decided that he's not going to be ejected, he's not going to suffer that penalty. I think they have the ability to do that, and I think if they do decide that he is going to be, held out the first half of the Boston College game, then USC has the ability to appeal. And I'm not sure, and I don't think Sark was, certain as to what exactly is that process and who you go through and how you when do you get it decided, who decides it, and all of that. I don't know that. But I do think they've got an appeal if he is, suspended, as the rule says, for the first half of the Boston College game as well.
All right. Let's move on to Jim had a question. Dan said, love your show. Thank you very much, Jim. Greg Townsend, is he a bust? I'm not an authority, but when I watch him, he really looks like a talented player. What do most people who have inside info project for him? Fight on from Jim.
Yeah, he's had a good camp. He showed us things we haven't seen from him. He's had, the injuries a couple of years in a row and hasn't gotten a chance. I think everybody always thought he had, the kind of ability that could get him on the field and really contribute. And, what a shame in a game where he really could have. He gets the chicken pox and, can't get on the bus. They find out right before they leave, and, really, really a shame. And it's one of the things that makes the game so special is you've got, Greg in that situation, and then, Leonard with his ankle not being sure of, how that's going to go, and then he just goes out there, and it's just amazing when you watch him, how he – the enthusiasm he plays with the play where he was chasing Ty Montgomery down from behind, basically running step for step with him. That's amazing. I mean, it's just he's a to have him.
You just mentioned Leonard Williams, and Kevin in South Orange County had a question on Leonard Williams. He said, with the bye week after Boston College, what are the chances Sark sits Leonard Williams this week to give him 3 weeks rest to get him healthy for the remainder of conference play?
I don't know. And I don't know. I probably would not. He's a kid that wants to play football. I think part of that would be determined by, Greg Townsend and what's his availability. Is he able to, contribute a little bit? Do you play him a little bit? I don't know. You want to overthink too much for the for the Boston College game. I think you want to prepare regularly, knowing you've got the week off afterwards. But I think that might be overthinking it a bit. Just my guess.
Well, for me, Dan, I don't think he's going to. I wouldn't guess he's going to sit out a game. That's not. If you talk to Leonard Williams, that's not something he would want to do to save himself for the rest of the season. But I don't think he's Would you think he's going to practice this week? I would guess no, but what do you think about practicing this week?
Yeah, I don't know. It was so hard. His problem was he couldn't get loose. He couldn't get that ankle loose. Once he got it loose, it didn't show that he had, you know, had that kind of an injury. Now, they've taped him in ways we haven't seen him taping before, but I would think they'll take it easy on him in practice this week, and as they should. And probably you would like to play him as little as you could this week, but you don't want to, you know, try to change his focus going into any week or any game. And you don't want to send any signals to the team that this is a game where you can kind of, you know, we don't really have, you don't want to, I don't think that's a signal you want to send. And that could be a signal that you're sending if you're kind of letting them know that, you know, your best player, well, we don't know if we really need him to play. So that would be my problem as a coach, if you would send any of those signals out that maybe this isn't a game we have to really go 100%. I think you just got to go play the game. And then you can make some decisions when you get there as to how the game's going. And, you know, that wouldn't be wrong at all. I'm not sure you make those decisions this week in practice, or you communicate that to the team. The teams pick up on that stuff really quickly. I mean, that was one of the problems, I think, some of the time with Pete's teams, where they went with a really cut-back game plan because they didn't think they needed everything. They didn't always react as well when they, you know, thought that they could get away with not having to, you know, go in firing all our guns, you know. And the kids pick up on that, and they know, if the coach, you know, we're not going to, you know, do everything we can do, or we're not going to, you know, be all out for this game, kids pick up and say, coaches don't think this is much of a game. So that would be, to me, the wrong message.
All right. Let's see. We have a Twitter question. It's from Dan 805 USC fan, who actually is a new subscriber to USCfootball.com. So thanks, Dan, for that. He said pregame, it was stated that Coach Wilcox, he's talking about Justin Wilcox, the defensive coordinator, would go up to the booth. But then he said he saw him on the field after halftime. Any news on that, or where he resides during games?
Yeah, I'm not sure who said pregame. I wasn't surprised to see him down on the field. I think that's kind of been his general MO down on the field. So I, you know, to me, I thought that was how he was going to do it. So, but we haven't spent a lot of time thinking about how they're doing the whole, you know, on the field and all that. I mean, you just figure they're going to do it the way that works best for them, the way they've been doing it, and you know, the group was together at Washington, and certainly looks like they've got it figured out as to how they want to do it.
All right. Let's see. We got a couple more to get to. This is from Matt. He says, in the college football playoff system, and people are going to start talking about this now, Dan, because USC is 2-0 and beat two teams that won 11 games last year, by the way. 2-0. He said, the college football playoff system, are they picking the best four teams at the end of the season, or the best four teams over the course of the season? Many years ago, USC lost an early game, but it may have been the best team in the country as they closed the season. As commentators mentioned, strength of schedule, it appears to be that the whole season, but this seems to be short-sighted. An example, Marcus Mariota or Cody Kessler is injured in the Pac-12 championship game and lost for the season, but their team wins. No way that the winner of the Pac-12 championship that just lost their QB is one of the best top four teams in the country. Do they get in or not? That's from Matt.
Okay, that would be a nightmare scenario. I think they could not resolve that fairly, and that would be really, you know, somewhat improbable. But if it happened, I don't know. How would you keep an unbeaten team out just because they lost their quarterback? And you do have enough time, or, you know, you're going to guess that, say, the injury is not going to allow him to play. However, I think the part of the question that really matters is, you know, is it overall for the season, or who are the best four at the end? I think it's the best four at the end, but I think they still have to determine that. I don't think, there's not written down anywhere as to, what the criteria are. Because I'm sure there are going to be some team, you know, some conferences and that arguing that our body of work and you know, da-da-da-da-da, and others are going to say, you know, like a team like USC will have a chance the way the schedule breaks if they, you know, stay unblemished and finish up with UCLA and Notre Dame. I mean, that's the beauty of the schedule. You can go in and say, hey, you know, whatever happens in the championship game, you still got a, you know, a case that you can make for, hey, we're one of the top four. So I think if I had to guess, they'll go for the top four at the end of the season. But I don't think, you know, when push comes to shove, how that 13, you know, person committee decides that question, it'll be interesting. You know, they may say, well, we can't really resolve that, and you got to count the whole season. But I would think it would be the top four at the end. And it was interesting that year when USC first, you know, made its appearance and went to the Orange Bowl, they got there only because they were number four in the BCS rank, you know, rankings. And even though they didn't go to the Rose Bowl, they were able to be selected by the Orange Bowl people because they were in the top four. So that was actually an example of a team like USC with two losses that did make it into the top four, according to the old Orange Bowl, or excuse me, old BCS ranking system with the computers and strength of schedule and all that. So one would hope that as much as it was, you know, dismissed as not a fair system, that however that played out would play out the same way for a team in a similar situation that was by far one of the best four by the end of the year.
All right, one last topic we want to get to, and it's going to probably take us a little bit to get through this, Dan, because while we're taping the show, a statement did come out on Pat Hayden. So Marcel's question was, although I don't agree with Pat Hayden's actions, the Pac-12 needs to look at the officiating from that game. Maybe Larry Scott should focus on getting the Pac-12 network into every home in California. So that's from Marcel. But while we were recording, this kind of came up on Twitter. I want to read you the statement, Dan, from the Pac-12. It says, the conduct by USC Athletic Director Pat Hayden was inappropriate. This is from Larry Scott. Such actions by an administrator in an attempt to influence the officiating and ultimately the outcome of a contest will not be tolerated. It went on, the conduct by both Steve Sarkisian and Hayden were in clear violations of our conference standards of conduct policy. We appreciate the public apology and recognition of the errors in judgment, as well as Pat Hayden's self-imposed two-game sideline ban. We took this into consideration as we determined the discipline. Nonetheless, the actions fell short of our expectations of our head coaches and athletic directors as role models for our student-athletes and important leaders of our institutions. So he ended up getting a $25,000 fine by the conference for inappropriate sideline conduct at Stanford. And there was also a statement by Bill Hancock, who is the College Football Playoff Executive Director. He said emotional outbursts at games are not a matter for the Playoff Selection Committee to deal with. This does not affect Pat Hayden's capability as a committee member. We recognize that athletic directors cannot be dispassionate about their own teams. That's why we have the recusal policy. So a lot has been going on since we started taping the podcast, Dan. I just wanted to kind of let that soak in a little bit for everyone out there listening to the podcast, and then obviously get your reaction to the $25,000 fine and reprimand and the statement by Bill Hancock.
Well, I mean, Hancock got it right. He's a good guy. I like Bill a lot. He's exactly right. Stuff happens. Probably that kind of stuff hasn't happened enough in USC games, and I'm glad it did. This is why you're probably really glad now that you don't have, you know, all the baggage that, you know, the previous coach, you know, Lane Kiffin, that would have turned into an absolute disaster. And I think it was good that, you know, Sark was fighting for his team and trying to, you know, influence Pac-12 officials who have really nailed USC in this situation, you know, for so many years. And the game, for example, where was Larry Scott 4 years ago when the, you know, Stanford clock operator absolutely screwed USC? Where was it? Where was the statement? Where was the fine? Did we ever hear anything? Was there a public statement? No, they're gutless. I mean, they protected some guy at Stanford, and everybody knows it. and he cheated USC in that game, and they did nothing. Or they didn't say they did anything. We've never known because it was Stanford, and that's, you know, that's their fair-haired boy. So I think it's the best $25,000 USC will spend this year in athletics. I think they stalemated those officials and made them think twice, and I thought that was a good thing. I thought it was a good thing for the team. I thought it was a good thing for USC. I think it, you know, maybe it will take a, you know, a hit a little bit on Pat's reputation. But I think when you do something like that for your team and for your program, I don't think that's a big hit. I'm glad Hancock decided it the way he did. I think the Pac-12 ought to start looking at its own. I mean, just, that was actually the best crew they've got left. And that's pathetic. It was 18 flags, 155 yards. I mean, you think these are two really badly coached, terribly disciplined teams? Or, you know, what else is going on here? And I think the Pac-12, again, has to take a look. There's no other game in the country, no other conference in the country that would have that kind of, you know, flagathon that they had Saturday. And, I mean, you watch it. I was watching the replay. And Fowler and Herbstreit could hardly, you know, talk about anything else because you couldn't go from one play to the next without, you know, the little flag symbol coming on, and they're trying to figure out, you know, what was that call? What was that call? So there was a lot more going on in that game that matters for the Pac-12 than Pat Hayden coming down to the sideline. And if that had to happen to highlight it, good for them and good for, you know, that's kind of what I said yesterday. I mean, it's good for Pat, good for USC, and maybe good for the Pac-12 in the long run. I mean, they're phony balonies, and they're going to cover up for the, you know, the incompetent officiating that we've seen forever. I mean, you know, I've been covering them for 12, 13 years. They're a laughing stock, and they got to get better. And they're weak. I mean, there are more plays probably in Pac-12 games. They're, you know, they throw the ball, they challenge. You know, more things happen, I think. And when you have weak officials like they have in the Pac-12, you get more plays where they don't know what to do, or they, you know, feel like I got to do something and I got to throw something. And it's too bad. I think the focus on Pat is the wrong place to focus it. The focus should be on the officials on the field. And if Larry Scott has any sense at all, he'll do something about this. But my guess is he won't.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. But I agree with you, Dan. I'm a little shocked at the outrage about him being on the playoff committee. To me, and what I've tweeted about, and I, you know, most people seem to agree with it, his first Call of Duty, his first priority should be his job, which is being the athletic director. I don't think you would ask Condoleezza Rice to do anything differently that would jeopardize her job or make her do her job any differently just because she's on the playoff committee. I don't think you want the athletic director to act any differently than he would if he was or was not on the playoff committee. That's a separate thing.
And he didn't know what was happening. He just knew somebody said, hey, you need to come down here. He didn't know. If you're the athletic director and you're at the game and somebody says you need to come down here, who knows? He might have, you know, really kept it from getting worse. Might have been it's a hypothetical. We don't know, but he could have. I mean, that could have been a really good thing that he did at the risk of, you know, his own reputation. But to act like, this is the problem with social media world we've got now, is you got these little weenies at USA Today, whoever, who was the first one that, oh, I'm outraged. Get him off the committee. I mean, the game wasn't over, and he's already writing his little column because nobody cares about this guy otherwise. So he had to try to jump onto something that he's, of course, watching the game in his pajamas at home somewhere in his basement. You know, now I got something I can get out there first. I can be the first one to call for his dismissal from the, you know, college football playoff selection committee. You know, that's the problem. I mean, everybody was trying to be, you know, first with the most outrage. And did anybody pays attention to those people other than saying what an idiot you are and how much you don't know about what you're talking about? But unfortunately, you know, you get out there first and then everybody had a – and then, of course, ESPN's going to jump on it with, like, I mean, the one idiot announcer who was doing the updates was doing – you know, tying every update in the game broadcast to Pat Hayden. You know, if there's something happened in another game, he said something like, maybe they need Pat Hayden to run down on the field for them. You know, what a bunch of jerks. You know, at ESPN, I thought, handled themselves really badly. Really, really. I thought, you know, Mark May and Lou Holtz and Reese Davis, who I guess is worried that Pat won't vote for Alabama, maybe, Reese, their outrage, that faux outrage was a joke. I mean, it was just absolute joke. And that we should let that influence any discussions. And I'm glad Bill Hancock didn't. Good for Bill. And that's exactly right answer. And it's the kind of answer that the Pac-12 probably should have given. But these are the guys that went after Matt Barkley. What a bad kid he was. Remember, he had to be disciplined for, you know, the comments about Boy Scout Vontaze Burfict. You know, remember that was, yeah, Matt was threatening. That just, you know, years of this get you to the point where when it's the Pac-12 and it's officiating and it's decisions about discipline and things like that, you know it's going to be wrong because you know they're going to get it wrong because they, you know, if it were flipped around, Stanford doesn't hear the same kind of stuff.
I agree 100%, Dan. It's hard to argue with that. It's more of a head scratcher, but I think, you know, they did what they had to do. They end up winning the game. That's the important thing. This will kind of blow over. Michael Lev tweeted, what sucks about this is the Hayden sideline thing is that all the TV people are going to be wasting our time tomorrow asking Steve Sarkisian about this, which is true. We'll probably get more of a crazy atmosphere at practice on Tuesday. But, you know, big win. You know, got to go on the road to play a not that great Boston College team and head into a bye week. I think they're handling this okay. They'll get through it.
I think the best thing is this reinforces all of that for this team. They just look at those idiots, you know, those people are going to show up with cameras tomorrow and won't watch practice, won't have any idea what's going on at practice, won't know anything about, you know, other than can we get a soundbite from Sark and can we get a Lane Kiffin-esque soundbite from Sark? You know, that's why they'll be out there. And I think this team has handled so many of those situations that this probably actually helps them rather than hurts them. This probably helps them focus on the important things and gets them totally away from all the unimportant stuff that's swirling around. It does also make the point, though, is there a more headline-grabbing program in America than USC? Year after year, week after week, if you do it at USC, they're going to pay attention to you. That probably in the long run helps. It's just amazing.
All right. Well, great stuff, Dan. We had a nice long segment with lots of questions, so we appreciate it. Obviously, after a big win, we're going to get that. So thanks for everyone sending those questions in, and thank you, Dan, for answering them all.
Okay. Enjoyed it.
Chris, another week covering USC football. That's just the way it is around this program. So, but thanks to Dan Weber. Thanks to Coach Harvey Hyde. And thank you for all tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast. We'll talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.